My name is Anita Bateman. I identify as a Black woman. I have light brown skin, dark brown eyes. My dark brown hair is currently in an updo in a lock bun. Today I am wearing a white t-shirt and black shorts, and I am speaking from my living room, which is cream with art on the walls in Providence, Rhode Island. I recognize and acknowledge that Providence is the traditional homeland of the Wampanoag and Narragansett peoples. And we recognize that this country was founded on the genocide of First Nation peoples and the enslavement of African peoples who were kidnapped from their homelands. I'm going to be reading a text I wrote for Manual 14, which is the manual that will accompany the Defying the Shadow show. The text is called Romancing the Shadow, in homage to a text Toni Morrison wrote in her collection of essays called Playing in the Dark. The year 2019 was momentous. The 1619 Project, organized by journalist Nicole Hannah-Jones, marked the 400th anniversary of the first enslaved Africans' arrival to the shores of what is now the United States. Meanwhile, Ghana designated 2019 as the year of the return to welcome African people dispersed throughout the diaspora back to the continent. It is also the year that the world lost a literary giant, whose writing was so poignant and heart-wrenching that it single-handedly revolutionized the English language. Embodying both Empress Supreme and Magician, this writer bent words to her will, obligating them to communicate the depth of Black life without pretense or apology. When Toni Morrison writes of ripping the veil in her essay, The Sight of Memory, she conveys it as a necessary breach, an invitation to Black people to own their own narratives, to transform terrible histories, dangerous even, into power. In the 19th century, the veil was present in slave narratives, in memories and events too abominable to recount. In the early 20th century, ruminating on the failures of post-Reconstruction America, W.E.B. Du Bois created a sociological concept that associated the veil with the line that separated Black life from white terrorism, i.e., the color line, first introduced by Frederick Douglass. Articulated as the darker or melanated skin of African Americans, as well as framed as an inhibitory blind spot of whiteness, this veil is a second sight that stems from the devaluation of African Americans' unique perspectives and self-knowledge. At some point, Black people are or will be made aware that Blackness has connotation. At the same time, Black people see whiteness, or whiteness is made transparent in a way that it isn't to white people. As a consequence, the veil is forever linked to double consciousness, and it's always relational. With the veil comes another aspect, the question of crossing over into the discernible, of bringing the shadow into light. In other words, visibility. Thus, the veil has a relationship to the gaze, with the gaze having the added function of looking. One of the most powerful tools in the arsenal of art history and visual culture, the gaze has the sociological and anthropological charge of making the world visually understandable. At the same time, its objective has been to obscure, to hide history, ahistoricize, dehistoricize, to overlook and erase, to veil without permission and often without recourse. Over the years, scholars have problematized this concept of visual accountability that the gaze demands for itself and its wielders. Some, like Martinician philosopher and poet Edward Glissant, have universalized the resistance to being known, calling it the right to opacity. For what is not visible cannot be trivialized, misunderstood, or exploited. This anti-visibility is not the same as being invisible. Rather, it is the power to operate against systems of imperial domination, including the gaze. It asks, how do we force the gaze to surrender? What if explanation were off the table? By enabling a petite marinage that can be expressed in visual and symbolic use of shadow, the gaze is challenged. This issue of Manual and the accompanying exhibition on view at the RISD Museum posit that the right to opacity deburdens contemporary work by artists who identify as Black and or queer and or feminist and or non-binary and or over it, whatever socio-cultural constriction it signifies. Opacity extends to artists who are simply not interested in explaining themselves or offering the emotional labor that is expended for inclusion. This right says, I have given enough. It also legitimizes and reclaims the shadow as a place of refuge instead of a place from which to escape. The shadow historically existed on the margins. To be conscripted to the shadow previously meant to be rendered invisible or relegated to non-existence. However, this negative interpretation belies the complex position Black survival and liberation has to agency. Operating in the shadow comes with a legacy of resistance, both in spiritual and ideological forms. To be clear, freedom doesn't have to be a constant struggle, nor should it be hidden. It is, however, a constant practice. Black people, say no. Rest, laugh, dance, disengage from emotionally draining people and situations. Take up space. Be vocal or revel in the silence of your thoughts. Wear what you want. Invest in self-care and your mental health. Stop explaining your presence to people who would sooner you disappear. Validate your frustration. Code switch if that makes you comfortable. Don't if it doesn't. Curate your life. Live on your terms. Succeed. Be accountable to yourself and to the people you love. Practice simple refusal and self-acceptance with the mindfulness that you belong to you alone, and that is enough. These small things are radical. You are your own best thing. Toni Morrison taught us that. You are your own best thing.